We're off to Washington, D.C., and Bob Costantini.
Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys. Well, yesterday went largely as expected. I do remember, and I got to bring this up, I remember telling you that the pardon process is supposed to be a process of, applying to with a lawyer, with the Justice Department, or whatever. But I was very much wrong in terms of how it was going to be handled. And last night, in the Oval Office, President Trump decided that he would pardon about 1,600 of the January 6th defendants, people who were imprisoned, people who were convicted, and people who were awaiting trial. Only 14 people received commutations. They were convicted of more serious crimes, and they had their sentences commuted. And that includes Stuart Rhodes and members of the Oath Keepers, plus some people who were with the Proud Boys. Enrique Terrio, who was the leader of the Proud Boys and one of the people who had, he was actually in Baltimore on January 6th, 2021. He never did enter the Capitol, but he was someone who was head of the Proud Boys, who had kind of planned and set up that there would be weapons outside of town. He was convicted by a jury of seditious conspiracy, and he had his conviction pardoned. So I start with that, by the way, because I had a lot of friends who were in the Capitol on January 6, 2021, and who had to fear for themselves living through that, a lot of media friends especially. And, of course, there were members of Congress who ended up fearing for their lives. But this is what the president has done is release a number of violent people, the people who at least committed violence, and some of whom have no regrets about it. Some have regretted it and said that they were misled, blah, blah, blah. But the president has unleashed a number of people who are potentially violent into the country, and these are domestic folks. And I bring that up because it comes from a sort of a personal standpoint. They scrawled, the people who were who attacked the Capitol, scrawled "murder the media" into one of the doors, one of the main doors they broke through. I went to see it a few days later, and it was still there. This has a personal meaning for a number of people who were inside, friends of mine, et cetera, et cetera. On that day, and I'm not sure how this will play out with the public. I really have to question the decision to and just to issue these massive blanket pardons. But it hones to what Donald Trump has tried to do, which is sort of rewrite history about that particular day, that these folks were hostages. Some of them, of course, have been released already, they were using their First Amendment rights, or trying to express their First Amendment rights at the Capitol. But it seems as though only a handful of the relative handful, 14 of them, who were the most violent, I guess, have had their sentences commuted to time served, versus just getting a blanket pardon, but otherwise everybody else is pardoned.
I think about this, and, by pardoning all of these people, is President Trump not also pardoning himself?
I don't know if it can be read that way, obviously, but he was obviously under indictment before the election, and all of that has been put aside. We got the special counsel's report about his actions, and some of that, a lot of which we knew, a lot of which would, you know, what went on in attempts to overturn the election. However, this was, you know, again, as I point out, he wasn't specifically charged with, you know, inciting the mob. He was never charged with seditious conspiracy the way Enrique Tarrio was for the Proud Boys and others and members of the Oath Keepers as well. The seditious conspiracy, which, you know, is basically saying he tried to overthrow the government. Donald Trump was not charged with that in any of this. He was charged with almost, what you might describe as a handful of charges that other January 6th rioters may have faced, and that's an attempt to block, you know, government proceedings and thwart the Electoral College certification and, with the fake electors and things like that. So whether this pardons him, I guess, would really only be determined and need to be determined if a Democrat wins the White House in 2028 and somehow somebody decides to revive the cases against Donald Trump that have been put aside. He was never put on trial for any of these, so this isn't a double jeopardy situation. He never faced trial for cases in Washington as well as in Georgia, which is a state case to begin with. But anyway, he never faced trial for this. Is it possible? Would someone be willing to want to revive the case against Donald Trump? And of course, that's we're speculating way, way ahead of ourselves here. If a Democrat were to win the White House, let's say in 2028.
Yeah, this is a spiral here that could just keep on rolling and rolling. Talk with us a little bit about the inauguration itself.
Yes. From this moment on, America's decline is over, one of the things that he said, and some of the things that you might have expected him to say. But I was going to be reluctant to say this, but then I heard the respected historian John Meacham on NBC News yesterday say that it was the most partisan inaugural address he's ever heard. And frankly, it is the most partisan inaugural address I've ever heard. He delivered so much of the campaign rhetoric in that inaugural address. There, I searched and searched to find anything that, you know, hinted of unity and except the idea that we're all going to come together and we're all going to be happy and our golden age is coming and that sort of thing. But he blasted a number of policies, as he has done during the campaign, even before the campaign, of the Biden-Harris administration. And in the background, in all of those TV shots, there was Joe Biden, there was Kamala Harris, and the others, their spouses and, former presidents, former Democratic presidents, were all there. So it was a campaign speech. There was, drill baby drill. We're going to get rid of, we're going to stop the Green New Deal. Venezuela and other Western Hemisphere countries have been sending all of their criminals. They've been opening up their prisons and sending them up here. It did not stray much from the normal campaign speeches he delivered at rallies, et cetera, et cetera. And the rally thing continued with the so-called parade, which, because of the weather, was moved over to the Capital One Arena. But inside the rotunda where the inauguration occurred and where the address was given, the inaugural address was given, Biden, of course, and Harris did not applaud through much of it at all. And I don't know what they say to each other when they walk out and the president says goodbye to the former president. I don't know. But Joe Biden felt very strongly that he had to carry on the traditional duties. They had a tea at the White House yesterday morning, as we did discuss. That is the sort of thing where the incoming president visits the outgoing president, and they have a, I'm sure they exchange pleasantries or something like that. But in the send-off, I just don't know. I mean, it's hard to say if apparently somebody mentioned that when Trump talked about naming the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America, someone mentioned that Hillary Clinton seemed to laugh out loud at that during the speech, which, as I've mentioned in my note to you this morning, that he did sign an executive order telling the Department of the Interior, I think, or something, and the State Department to refer to it as the Gulf of America from now on. But, you know, and as I also said to you, this is why Michelle Obama did not show up at the inauguration yesterday. She's not the sort of person, I would guess, who would want to sit through a trashing of the, you know, the not only the Biden years, obviously, but also a lot of the Obama policies that Donald Trump put into that inaugural address. I maybe need to listen to it all again a little more closely and find some words of national unity or something like that. But and I'm sure there was about us needing to come together, and this is the great time. The greatest time for America. You know, there was the talk about windmills and how they're making whales beach themselves, and all the stuff that he said on the campaign trail. It was partisan, and that even went to, by the way, guys. And I know I sound like I'm, you know, trying to defend Joe Biden, but a lot of that went into even the benedictions. You know, Franklin Graham, who was a strong supporter of Donald Trump, you know, thanked God for saving Trump from the assassination attempt so that he could make America great again. You know, those benedictions are supposed to be largely, you know, about how guide the new president and to dear Lord, guide the new president to make things better for our country and wisdom and the like. And all of the benedictions eventually led to partisan rancor, is really the way to put it.
What I got from all of this and all that you're saying and everything that I've seen and heard, resistance is futile. That appears to be the message.
Yeah. Well, there'll be some resistance in Congress occasionally with the Republicans. Democrats will probably try to resist. You know, they're all of this talk obviously is you know, very, as I say, partisan rhetoric, but a lot of the eventual doing of some of these things is going to take some congressional action. And the Republicans aren't necessarily going to be singing all on the same page with this, especially when we start talking about having to raise the debt limit and what have you. So there's a lot of work to be done, and it will take some time. You know, he signed all those executive orders yesterday, and it will take some time to put into place a number of other things that he really wants to do. As I should point out, he even used the term "drill, baby, drill" during the inaugural address, something that he would say during the campaign, that you would expect him to say during the campaign or during a rally. I don't know if you can say that resistance is futile.
I meant that as a message. I meant that as a message. You know, that just basically, this is we're on a roll here, and nobody can stop us. And you might as well come aboard, as Mark Zuckerberg has done, as Jeff Bezos has done, as all of these people have done. You know, you might as well come aboard, because this is a rocket ship headed for the moon, and you know, there's no stopping us.
He's been working on this for like the last 60 days or so.
Yeah.
So this rollout, this is a reveal. A lot of work went into this.
Sure. And, you know, speaking of rockets, of course, he wants to plant the American flag on Mars, which is a bit aspirational. There's no question about that. Then he has Elon Musk at his side at the moment to try to get that done, or, you know, to help maybe move that idea forward. But today, at least, he'll be meeting with Republicans at the White House to try to start figuring out the legislative agenda. And of course, part of it is that the GOP on the Hill just can't agree whether they want to do one big, beautiful bill, as Trump has said, to put in there the tax legislation and the border legislation that he wants in place, or if they want to make two or three separate bills for certain things that he, and there's disagreement about that. There is. A lot of this has to be done. They want to do it through the reconciliation process, because Democrats aren't going to allow a lot of things, or are not going to support certain things in the Senate with this. So they have to do it just so they get a simple majority votes. But the... it's just hard to say. It really is, because the Trump attitude is back. And that's the way it's going to be for 4 years now with it. And we all have to figure out what that means. And I should also point out, by the way, there have already been lawsuits filed by federal government agents, federal government employee agencies that are seeking to undo the DOGE commitment, the department, or whatever it's supposed to be, in the end. It's not official, and they're arguing that it should have absolutely no role in the, you know, trimming the federal government. So there's going to be a lot of legal stuff as well. Here.
Okay.
But he also, I mean, he talked about, you know, ending the Green New Deal in the speech. And, you know, if you're Joe Biden and you sat through this, I don't know how you're feeling right now.
Yeah.
Now, and by the way, the Democrats were pretty silent yesterday on what Joe Biden did in the morning, which was basically issue blanket preemptive pardons to his family members. His brothers and sister and some of their spouses, people who've had, you know, potential business dealings with that. Democrats, probably ran the other way if any reporters wanted to ask them about that. And just as Republicans, and I should point out Republicans, that of course, this was done last night, too, the pardoning of the J6 rioters. The Republicans have been very silent about that so far. No one is likely to come out and be critical of it. We'll wait and see.
Bob, as always, we appreciate your great reporting. We've covered a lot of ground here.
Boy.
Let's save some for tomorrow.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Bob.
There's a lot of executive orders to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. Bob, thank you for your great reporting, and thank you for the drill down.
All right.